very much. It's a real pleasure to be here tonight. I'd just like to thank Paul for the invitation. It's great to be here. I'm going to start off with a little poem that just kind of came from a childhood memory, and it's called Snakeskin Stilettos. 8 years old, you understand these shoes are different. Not for nothing has your mother wrapped them in paper, shut them into their box, set them at the very back of the wardrobe, forbidden. You imagine them on their own in the dark, hissing softly, biding their time. Sneak in, creak open the door, lift the lid and let them out. Untissue the fear. Run your fingers against the fistly scales. Press the fangs and heels into your palm. Something you've never felt before. These shoes are live and dangerous. This next poem, I suppose, is a kind of a love poem. It's called The Apothecary. He understands the garden, works with its seasons. Nothing lies fallow. Hedges protect, shelter new green. Sap runs to the core, brilliant, so the earth does not smell of decay. He has planted herbs for healing. Nothing grows in vain. Even names become a litany against dis-ease, sweet and musical upon her tongue. Comfrey, Feverfew, Valerian, Amara Dulcis, Angelica, Golden Time. Seeds of peony and wine to cure the nightmare, oil of cowslip to assuage the forgetful evil. By old remedies and the art of ordinary means, patiently he conducts her to health. Blue stars of borage to gladden her heart, eye bright so she can see the colours of his love. He has made it an apothecary's den, where bees drink from honeyed cups and small birds tumble branch to branch. Distillations of scent and sound lift on the morning air to her bedroom window, dreams of lushness, fragrant awakening. And this next poem is kind of a bit of an antithesis to the other one, to the last one. This one's called Notice of Eviction. You are hereby given notice that from this day forward your tenure has ceased. You are therefore banned from setting foot in any thought process, conscious or unconscious, that belongs to me. Under subsection C, this includes dreams and fantasies, whether of a sexual nature or not. Please note, I shall be changing the locks. This next poem came from a dream, really, but it was one of those dreams that, you know, when you're in that kind of half conscious state, so it felt almost like a shamanic journey almost, and it came just shortly after my mother had died. So I'll read this. It's called Nest. I wake beneath a chestnut tree, back against bark, legs stretched out through grass. Long fingered leaves drip light and shade haphazardly. The air is warm. In front of me, a lake lies like a mirror, and I break its surface, wash my face in its salty, ice-cold water. My horse is waiting, shaded and patient. His skin is comfort, his breath green, as he carries me on his back to the flat stone altar at the forest's heart. Being dead, I lay myself down on it thankfully, and the black bird comes, lifts me to her round, high nest. Inside the egg, I am a cell, dividing and dividing, first heartbeat, shell filtered light warm on my lidless eyes, until time comes, a and the shell cracks. My horse is waiting, bright and patient. His skin is sunlight and his breath air. Amongst the moss, his bones are white and dry. In my beak, I lift his great rib hull, his long leg bones, the instrument of his skull. And in the highest branches of the tallest tree, in wind-tossed waves of leaves, I build my horse's nest, my ship of bones. How to feed your lover. Starter, ortolan. First, catch your songbird. Blind it. Force feed it millet, grapes, and figs. Then drown the tiny creature in Armagnac. Defeather and roast for a few minutes in its own juices. Place the embroidered napkin over your lover's head to shield her from the gaze of God, and serve her the 2 ounces of life. Place it hot on her tongue until only the beak protruding from her lips. The aromas will fill her senses. See if she could taste the entire life of the bird. And, fixed between the last air and the Armagnac, the flavour of guilt. See if she can cease to exist except as taste itself, as the small bones lacerate her gums, as she bites down and chews, her own blood mixing with the bird's flesh. Main course, blowfish. Buy your fish from the market where they are sold alive with their mouths stitched shut. Slice the flesh thinly and tenderly prepare a fine dish of sashimi. The fish's skin can be puffed up with air and used as a lantern for gentle illumination of the feast. Then see if she will trust you enough to eat, that even when her lips begin to tingle and become numb, she'll trust that you have not served up the poison to which there is no antidote. Dessert, miracle fruit. This may prove difficult to source. You may need to send to the ends of the earth, but all that is needed is a sliver of this mythic fruit. It is well worth the expense and effort, for once she has tasted it, you will forever taste of violets in her mouth. This next poem I'm sure you've all heard of Burke and Hare, the grave robbers. They originated in the north of Ireland before they moved to Scotland. And this poem is called Mary Patterson, so it's written from the point of view of one of their victims, who they killed and then sold to the anatomists. But there's a kind of a twist to the story that when I heard it, that kind of really kind of shocked me, I suppose. So this is written in the voice of Mary Patterson. Plied with gin, stupefied, Burke's knee on my breast, Hare's hand across my breast till the life is pressed out of me, then I'm delivered to your door. And it was one thing, Dr. Knox, who buys the beef, to take my body for professional, scientific purposes, for the greater good, so to speak. And for certain, my body was worth more as dead meat. I'd hitch up my skirts for just a few coins in the shadows of Canongate, whereas you paid £7.10. But to lay me out like that, naked on the couch, sensuously arranged under the flickering candlelight, my dead face seductively turned to the audience, and a white sheet draped teasingly over my calves, and then have me sketched before my dissection. Now that's a disgrace. What were you thinking? And you, Mr. Ferguson, surgeon in training, looking at me in your professional capacity as I looked at you in mine just 2 nights previous, you still want to use me? Dissolution of the circus. After the last of the big cats died, toothless and emaciated, the elephant was impounded by animal welfare, and the ponies were sold to a riding school where they soon forgot all their tricks. The bearded lady had electrolysis, married the fat man who joined the gym and was less than half the man he used to be. The clown enrolled with the Open University, English Literature and Philosophy, and the contortionist gave up cocaine, finally straightened out his head. There's only the two of us left now, me and the ringmaster with his top hat and his whip. And though the spangles had mostly fallen off my costume, I can still balance up there on the wire. I'd like to read a few poems from the new book, The Goose Tree, which is being launched this Thursday. So I'll start off with one which I was having a conversation with someone about, you know, when your parents pass on and the house that you grew up in is closed to you, someone else owns it, someone else lives there, and you can't go there anymore. I was feeling kind of quite sad, I suppose, about that. And then I thought, you know, actually, I can go there anytime I want. So this poem is called To the Current Occupants of My Parents' House. I need no key, no invitation. Whether you are in or out, I come and go as I please. And even in the dark, I intimately know my way from room to room, with all the secret spaces in between. Every creak of door or stairs, every layer of paint and tears. I look in the bathroom mirror, often lie down on my own bed. Sometimes I simply sit and listen, memories inhabited again. It's not the dead who haunt, but the living. The presence that you sense is me. This next poem, my grandfather was one of the, they happened so much down in the south of Ireland, but in the north for a long time there were tent missions where people would go along and preach, they were kind of lay preachers, and at the end of the night everybody was supposed to go down to the front and say, yes, I'm saved. My grandfather was one of the men who preached in those tent missions. And this poem comes from a memory, a childhood memory. My grandfather had died, but my granny was living with us. And it's called Tent Mission Men. Out of the dark, they loomed large at the door, alarming even when my mother let them in. Two men in bowler hats and heavy overcoats that smelt of rain ushered into the good room, bringing the chill of the night with them. They drank tea from the best china and talked to Granny about souls saved by God's grace and through my grandfather's witness. One knelt, crushed me to his chest, prayed for my safe deliverance from eternal hell fire. His huge hand around my head, my ear against his heart, woolen cloth scratching my cheek, his terrible fervour, his fierce burning for the Lord Jesus and the poor lost sheep. Red. Comb of cockerel, oriental poppies, winter berries, robin's breast, speck of life in the yolk. Blood beetle rubies crushed for crimson, death in it, mordant alum fix. The hand of Ulster, hand of history, red rag to a bull caught red-handed. Years of sky warnings and delights, blood letting, pressure, thicker than water, not thick enough to carry the weight of us. Soaked, flowing, lips with wine, desire, remembered rhythms, the first rill down a pale leg, a sigh of relief, the stain life makes. Blood thickens, slows, dries, rust, clot. Touches of red into the house in compensation, a vase, two cushions, red frames for five black dancing herons and one black horse. I'm in the M&S cafe, talking to the dead, putting my point across over a skinny latte, carrying on the sort of one-sided conversation that the dead are expert in, refusing to refute or affirm. I know a woman who used language as a knife to cut love's tongue out, to leave love speechless except in the bloody bag of its own heart. Love, driven to madness by the pain of silence, is a beast in a cage, a flail to the back, an avalanche. I'm spending a lot of time on my own in these tissue-thin days of Scrivener and manuscript and which is which. This time I'm saying nothing, keeping right out of it. I'll read another couple maybe? This poem in the Ulster Museum in Belfast, there is the skeleton of Megasaurus hibernicus, which, as you will all know, is the great Irish elk, the great Irish deer. It's a very impressive skeleton. The antlers are so big and so wide. So this is my kind of take on Megasaurus hibernicus. An old woman, womb a dried knot, until I conceived in a dream a boy who lay beneath my ribs for a year and a day. Birthed, his forehead bulged with the velvet buds and antlers, and as he grew, so did they. He is magnificent now, my miracle, my stag of seven times, keeping the hounds at bay. This next little poem came out of a conversation I had with some friends. We were having coffee and they were kind of telling me about all the things they wanted to do and you know, crafty things. And I came away from the conversation thinking, I don't know, not so sure. So this poem is called No Domestic Goddess. I've no desire to make chutney, or learn how to crochet, or veil myself to keep bees. Don't want to bake cupcakes, sew my own dresses, or handcraft Christmas decorations. It's cobwebs festooning my ceilings. Food tastes best when someone else has cooked it. I haven't ironed since 1999. I grow no useful stuff, no carrots, turnips, or potatoes. I plant blousy, gladiola, fuchsia, amaryllis, robes. I prefer not to be responsible for anything, though I like to scatter seed for birds who come and sing and go to sit themselves. I'll finish off just with two short poems. A few years ago, I've never seen a whale in real life, and I really want to see a whale. So we came to this area a few years ago on one of those whale watch trips, and you can tell how successful it was by the title of the poem, which is called No Whales. 5 hours in Roaring Water Bay, and we've given up on whales. Morning hopes naive, the sea's too vast. Even the seals are no consolation. Big bull on one rough reef, white pups on another, mothers in the water anxiously eyeing us. Half an hour from harbour, the dolphins come to join us, keeping before the bow. They leap, circle, provide their muscular magic, lift the whole day on their shining backs. And I'll just finish with this one which is called To Pacify the Past. A prayer wheel engraved with the claims of my ghosts. I place it at the corner where, when coming home, I turn towards the door of our house, and where, when leaving, I turn away from the door of our house. With a simple movement of my hand, I can set the wheel spinning, memories like prayers ascending every time I pass. Thank you very much.